In this episode of Anime Pacific, Dane finishes off his PS3 story.
We talk Star Wars, Is the Empire Really Bad? The Witcher, computer game and series.
Japan, auctioning off its porn stars. And what are Chinese forum posters really thinking?
And I review the Armor Trooper Votom side story OVA, Armor Hunter Mellow Link.
All coming up on episode 85 of Anime Pacific.
Anime Pacific.
New theme song, test one. It's Anime Pacific, episode 85.
85, very exciting.
Joining me is the Ukrainian with the cranium, Alex.
Right.
And
yes,
I am
hello.
the Mick with the big dick. There we go. That was good. That's the best introduction I've ever done and the classiest.
Yeah, that's right. I'm sure all the hordes of new listeners are going to be very excited.
That's right. I certainly hope they are. And as some of you might know, it's been a little while since our last episode, which itself was somewhat of a cursed episode because, I got sick, and then my wife got sick, and then my baby got sick, and then everyone got sick, and it was just one thing after another. And I'd literally sit down and try and edit the podcast, and then something would happen.
Yeah, so that show was probably like 4 days late. And when you did end up posting it, there was a... people who downloaded it early, you noticed that I was missing from like the last 5 minutes of the show. Dane forgot to put my voice back in, and the spoiler warning.
Really?
Yeah,
it must have made for the best episode yet. Gee, why is this so good?
You'd be talking and there'd be like this pause, and then you'd laugh. Whoa, 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 whoa. That's right, Alex, what a great comment. And of course they ought to, you know. And you completely left out the spoiler warning for, you'd say, you're meant to edit in. It was supposed to be like, please jump ahead to, the
blah,
time
blah, blah,
like,
blah.
Yeah, four, yeah, but you left in the blah, 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 blah. You didn't record over it with your voice saying, 44 minutes and 23 seconds, whatever. So you completely pooched that. So, and you I guess you didn't check it before you posted it, since you got so late, you sort of just threw it on there, and then you went to bed. So when I woke up in the morning...
Well, like crawled to bed.
Yeah. So when I woke up in the morning, I saw, boy, they really screwed the pooch on this episode. Well, I didn't notice, actually. Jake posted right away. He's like, he downloads these things like 5 minutes after they're posted, complaining about the bugs. And I said, okay, well, I better email Dane and tell him to fix it. But I figured, well, you're so busy. When are you going to get around to it? So I managed to fix it myself. Huzzah, huzzah. Lucky I kept all my audio files. So I put my voice back, and I fixed the spoiler warning. So I don't know. For those of you who downloaded the show early and didn't bother downloading the fix, we apologize.
Yeah.
But I'm sure most of you, I put it up there pretty fast, so most of you probably got the fixed one. Unfortunately, because when I posted the fixed episode, I deleted the old post that Dane had made for episode 84. And in the comment section of that post, Jake, the Root Beer King, along with complaining about the various bugs, he said, he complained that Dane never finished his PS3
yeah.
story. So I guess last week Dane started talking about how he wasn't going to get how he wanted to get a PS3, and he didn't get one until now. Or and I guess I sidetracked him somehow, and he never finished his grand story. So please, Dane, tell us your PS3
right, well,
adventures.
I was going to get one on that day, and various forces worked against me, and I didn't. And then I got one yesterday, and that's about as exciting as it gets. But yeah.
That's it? I thought you were... No, I seem to recall your complaints about Sony and how they're evil.
Well,
and,
that didn't make for a great story,
and,
but
you're never buying
unfortunately,
a piece.
It just wasn't as... Well, one big bombshell that was dropped was that Yakuza 3, which you would have seen at our Anipak website, anipak.blogsum.com, that Yakuza 3 is indeed coming out in English. And... that's the sort of game for me that would make me want to get a console because you know, it's console exclusive and it's an awesome game, and it's the spiritual successor to Shenmue, which I think I worded this quite well when I wrote that in the in the post, in that it is the perfect marriage between the exciting and the mundane, which is not a bad thing at all, you know.
Yeah, and you, and like you talked about me, because I remember that so clearly on that Dreamcast. Like, that's the only thing I remember about that game was, you know, you live in this little village and you go to work on the docks, and you're like a blue collar worker. You know, it was in the 80s, so you had some of these foreigners working in Japan for the big money, and you're on the docks and you use this little, drive this little forklift around, stacking crates. Go to the break room. In the break room, there was like a Pac-Man game or something.
Oh, what was it?
Cheesy from the 80s.
Galaga or some Sega game from the 80s, and it was the whole thing was in there. Oh, it was just so great.
Yeah, you sort of, you know, you'd show up at the office at the docks, and it was like you go into work and you come home in the evening. It was great. I just loved that, you know. And you worded this just perfect. You say here, Alex's fond memories of Shenmue don't entail the exciting martial arts battles, but driving a forklift around and moving cargo. A hard-earned paycheck from working at the docks in Shenmue, oddly enough, felt more gratifying than breaking an American sailor's legs. Yes, that's exactly it. I just love that. And you got the whole that. Especially, you know, a game like that now, I should say lived in Japan, now I'm back in British Columbia. It's the perfect time for nostalgia. If a game like that comes out, set it even in like the boom times in the 80s again, or even better would be like in the 70s or something. Well, hell, just because I don't live there anymore, even setting it in the present day, I just, you know, the mundane, almost Grand Theft Auto-like, you know.
That was actually one thing in my review of Kamikaze Taxi, which, that was a solo review, wasn't it? You weren't in that review, were you?
I don't know.
Okay, it must have been a riveting review if you don't even remember. But my review of Kamikaze Taxi, it was a solo review. I said that nostalgia played a part in it. It was filmed in mid-90s Japan, which is when I first went there. And although you think, okay, well, not much, you know, aesthetically has changed since then, but you'd be surprised. You can't necessarily articulate it into words, but when I was watching that film, and I'm just remembering when I was in Japan in the 90s, I'm like, it's just like that. And I felt really nostalgic for it. Sometimes, you know, of course, the 80s is wildly different, you know, in terms of fashion and technology and aesthetic and all of that. But, you know, you could play Shenmue through the Dreamcast emulator on the PC, which, you know, has got a few little graphical plugins and tweaks that'll make the graphics even better than they were, you know, back in the day of its release. But Shenmue 2 was released only in Europe in English. That just came out as the Dreamcast, unfortunately.
That was horrible, though, right? Where they go to Hong Kong and it was a complete mess.
Well, as a game, it was fantastic, but as a depiction of Hong Kong, it was just one of the most terrible depictions of Hong Kong. I suppose it was done on purpose as kind of a fantastical, you know, to be a fantastical version of Hong Kong. But yes, the Hong Kong depicted in Shenmue was, I could not tell you in one podcast what was wrong with that. I mean, basically, it looked like people were wearing, you know, Ming Dynasty clothes, and apparently the shopping district is in a giant, huge temple.
Something like that
actually did exist in Hong Kong until the Japanese blew it up in World War II. So, yeah.
Well, we're going way off topic.
We are.
We should get back onto the PS3.
Onto the PS3, yeah.
While you're buying a PS3, Tom. So, but I maybe even on this podcast, actually.
Cause I did. I think PS3 I know what you're talking about.
Because you would rate, like we. This is, it's been 3 years since we've been doing this. And I think our 3-year anniversary went by kind of just without us even acknowledging. But it's been 3 years, and I seem to recall many years ago that how you were anti PS3 and how it sucked, and you know, raging against Sony, and how you'd be how you'd
though I,
you
I
know, blow your friend or something rather than before you get a PS, some outrageous comment.
Well, no, I do remember these comments, and I also do remember acknowledging that I would probably eventually get one. The point is that in the beginning, yes, Sony did everything wrong, and then they changed it to doing a lot right. Nintendo, on the other hand, did everything right in the beginning, and now it seems they're...
Oh, that's right. That's why you bought the Dream... What's it
Wii.
Called? Wii.
Yeah.
The Wii. That's right. You were anti-PS3, but then you were all excited about the Wii.
Yep, as everyone was, basically, and the sales contest.
Yeah, but now it turned out to be a pile of poo, because there are no good games for it.
There are good games, but they're all 99% first-party games. All the excellent third-party games don't do that well, and the quality control's down the toilet. So there's, you know, seen this Twilight shake if this is in the correct order, or, you know, just these really terrible games. But also in the online part, you know, Nintendo's so afraid of pedophiles that you got to get a friend code, which is like a 300-digit code. And then, you know, that's your friend and you can play games with them. But, you know, there's nothing like dedicated servers. It'll sort of auto-connect you or say, this server's this good, this server's that good, this good connection, this server's got a, you know, yellow, green, or red, basically. I got no idea about the ping. But the PS3, on the other hand, which I just installed yesterday, it's just so happening online. They've got so much stuff. The PS3 store... which you can buy old PlayStation 1 games for, like, you know, a few dollars. PlayStation 3 store games. You know, video on demand, free videos, which differ to region. But apparently all the Hong Kong free videos are girls in skimpy bikinis, so I'm not complaining. But just the whole, you know, it's really a multimedia...
So
machine.
Did you get the PS3 Slim? I guess that's the latest.
Yes, I got the PS3 Slim.
Yeah, you know, I was just reading over at my favorite website, Senkaku Complex, that now Sony is almost making money on each machine. At the beginning, it was costing them $800, and they were selling them for $600.
Yep.
So they were losing $200 on each console. But now they're selling them for $300. This is all American dollars. But it's only costing them $336, so they're only losing $36 on each on each unit.
Yeah,
now.
And
so,
the sales are going way up, but you know, I am a little bit.
Well, I don't think the PS3 has been cracked, right?
No, it's
Yeah, but now you'll be forced to buy legitimate hardware that goes against the Dane's soul.
That. I don't like that stereotype, thank you very much, because...
What are you talking about? You were, like, at that Dreamcast, you must have had, like, 1,000... Every day you'd be over across the street.
Let me put it this way. I bought more Dreamcast games than I did PS2 games. That's the truth.
Well, yeah, it's because you pirated even more PS2.
Well, come on, I was a... the incriminating special, Anime Pacific 85... That's how many years I'm going to be locked
away.
Yeah,
but why don't you get an Xbox 360?
Oh, okay, yeah, now, thank you for bringing that up, because this is exactly what I wanted to touch upon. One of the things that I applaud Sony for is the online experience. Now,
oh, yeah, it's much better.
Much better. You know, they've got the way all of this is set up and all the servers and everything, it's fantastic, and it's all free. As it should be.
Yeah, oh yeah. Xbox Live, they charge you, those hosers.
Yeah, Xbox. Not only that, they charge you, but you're basically naked without a microphone. And I always think Xbox Live is a haven for foul-mouthed, potty-mouthed 12-year-olds,
oh,
30-year-olds.
Yeah. I agree. I never use voice on. Even in like PC games, I don't use voice. Just because there are too many fucking teenagers who deserve to be shot.
Or just...
They shouldn't be... annoying jerk-offs, too. You know. Yeah.
But...
No thanks.
Yeah, I mean...
But I agree with you there. But like if you get an Xbox 360, you know, you'd especially in Hong Kong, you wouldn't go online. You'd mod it. And just play, you know, pirated games to your heart's content is what you would do.
No,
you can't go online with that anyway, because if you do, they'll discover that you've got an illegal system and they'll brick your system, which what they did had a few weeks ago.
Look,
which I thought was pretty funny. If you've got a pirated system, you're playing pirated games, you don't go online. It's just common sense, but people are too dumb to realize that. So,
yes. Well, anyway, yeah. I you know, maybe I have downloaded one or two titles in my life, but
okay.
But it's not because I'm some sort of, you know, hardcore pirater. You know, I want to support games, and I'm buying more games now than I ever have, especially on the PC, because they really
did
need
you
it.
Buy Wheeze 'Em In that you raved about? It's your favorite show ever, and
you know what?
Come on, if there's one game that you should have bought, it's that
The
one.
Witcher.
You friggin' sub.
Oh,
yeah.
I bought The Witcher.
The game?
Yeah, the box version, yeah.
Oh, you did.
Yes,
not.
I did.
Big
okay,
liar.
I'll show it to you via webcam.
Okay, let me see.
Okay.
I
after the show. I'll edit your reactions in.
Yeah, that's right. You big liar. See, I actually bought that Wii Zim in. I bought it a couple months ago, and I've been playing it actually. I'm almost finished. I'm in the fifth act.
Now there's
and there's
something.
It's a good game.
That would see. This is the problem with the Wii. If they, I wouldn't buy that game for the Wii because you know it'd be the graphics would be really nerfed. But if it was on the Wii, it'd flop because if you think of any sort of more adult mature games on the Wii, unfortunately, they just don't seem to do well. Whereas, that's a great example because that's a PC exclusive and they were going to make a console version, then they just went, nah. And the game sold almost 1 million copies, which is great for PCs.
What, The Witcher sold almost 1 million copies?
Yeah. None
of which were purchased by Dan. But yes, I agree. And it's for $20, which was what I bought it for, it's totally worth
it.
Yeah. You know, it's a little bit...
Sequel's coming out soon.
As long as they, well, if we go off on a little bit of a tangent here, The Witcher as a game, like, it's worth the $20, and it's a bit old, long in the tooth now, but that just means you don't have to have, like, uber hardware to run it. The story is really interesting, the universe
it's
set in is
it's
quite
it's not black or white, there, though, the morality in the game is...
Yeah, you can sort of choose different paths. I guess there's like sort of three different. There's a lot of different sort of. It's almost like a choose your own adventure.
Yeah, it's. I would probably better describe it more as an action adventure game than an RPG. It's not like Oblivion where you can, you know, climb up the mountain and meet someone in a shack and get a mission or something. It's more of an adventure game, I'd say.
Well, yeah, okay, but they make you, which is good. They give you a bunch of different choices. You get two different girls you can end up with at the end. There's if you take one, you can't get the other. You know, and there's three different sort of stories arcs that you can go on, like the pro elves arc, or the neutral arc, or the pro humans arc. So there's some replay value there. You know, you got some various sort of decisions, moral choices you got to make throughout the game. And, you know, so this one or this one. So that you know, that's interesting. But, you know, it's still a bit quirky, you know. Like, I think whoever recorded the audio, it's supposed to be improved in the version I got, but I didn't really see it. Like, I don't think the actors had the sort of what was going on in screen in front of them.
Quite possibly.
So you'll get like a sequence where like, you know, let's go, you know, it'll be like an action sequence, like, you know, attack, let's go attack the elves. And you hear like heroic voices and then like the action will be over and you know, they'll be standing around talking but the guy will still be like, okay, now follow me, you know, as if like the actor didn't know the action was, you know, the action was over on screen. So he was like, okay, here's a bunch of dialogue. This next one must also be an action one. So he's like, follow me. But they're just standing around picking their bum. You know, it doesn't make any sense. So there's a lot of little stuff like that throughout the whole thing.
One of the versions, one of the things that the special edition allowed for was to play the game in the original Polish dialogue with English subtitles.
Yeah.
I always think I quite liked listening to Polish when I was, watching that series. So, or doing that series. But anyway, before we get onto the show proper, didn't you want to talk about your experiences in the Witcher TV series?
I've been, so that inspired me to watch
now,
the
now before
TV
you say
series,
anything, I should note to you that that was done more than half a decade ago. My skills,
5 years ago,
which I have much better at now, and I was actually thinking of making a new edition of it.
Oh, you do, okay. God, please, like. It's painful. I now understand why I bailed on it the first time. Like I'm watching it again thanks to the game, but I watched the first three episodes and I bailed, and it's been sitting on my hard drive ever since. But the game has inspired me to press on. And I gotta say, like the actual like TV show, the first episode, even the second, they're not that good. It's kind of an origin story, but things really pick up.
Oh, yeah,
episode 4, 5. Especially 6. 6 is like, it really gets good. And it's kind of, I really hate to say this because it's like, you know, you're my friend and you worked a big effort on doing this. And without this, I wouldn't be watching it at all. But I'm enjoying it, I gotta say, in spite of the subtitles. Like, it's like it painfully bad, especially episode 6. Episode 4, like, there's this. Maybe it's the fault of the TV show. Maybe there was no explanation. But like, reading those subtitles, it's almost like incomprehensible, especially toward the end. They're fighting this dragon, and it looks like they're gonna leave, and then but they don't leave, and then nothing's explained, and the subtitles are like incomprehensible. I sort of blame.
It's interesting you mentioned that.
The same thing happens because, in episode 6, where you seem to have. Two different, like there's like this, you've got this sort of really bad translation of some, it's like almost like a favor that the king has to do. So the king goes out and he gets his life saved by this guy, this knight. And so the knight is owed a favor by the king. And the king says, which I didn't quite, it's impossible to understand, decipher from your subtitles. But what I gather is what happened is the king promised him his unborn daughter, or promised him something. It's not clear from the subtitles. But in any case, the guy feels debted to the king. He feels that the king dies. So later he comes back. He feels he's entitled to marry the daughter of the king. Which I sort of just puzzled it out despite the subtitles. Now, at the end, what I gather, it's kind of a play, because the Witcher there, he sort of saves the queen from her situation and the princess from her situation. And there's a bit of back and forth. And again, this is impossible to decipher from you get hints at it from your horrible subtitling. But what I gather is that he sort of says something like, okay.
That's how they recruit witches.
I'm going to come back later, and I'm going to be, you owe me a favor now. And I'm going to be entitled to your unborn daughter. Yeah. Yeah. So it's almost like, okay, the same thing that happened to you, princess, like the princess's husband there.
Okay. Well,
now you owe me the same thing. I'm entitled to, but you don't get that at all from your subtitles, but it's just atrocious.
Yes, this is what I'll explain
in
just a sec, actually.
Now. And things improve. You must have got a different translator, because things improve dramatically. Episode 7. You gotta get that guy to go back and retranslate the first 6, or at the very least, you should be able. Like I am, I'm sort of puzzling out what's going on, and then on your own, fix up. Even if it's not exactly what they said, at least make it understandable for the people who are watching the show, so that they don't have to like pause it and then okay, you read the th- you read this, and you put the you put like whole paragraphs of text on the screen too. You gotta like pause the thing, and then you gotta go read the book, and then you unpause it, and he sort of carries it on. And when you're not doing that, you have things flash on the screen for like 20 milliseconds, then they disappear. So you gotta like rewind it, and you gotta press play, and you gotta go frame by frame to where the subtitles popped up, and then you gotta pause.
Okay, well, for the subtitles. Basically, what this show, this was the hardest project I ever worked on. It was also the first, but it's funny that you noticed improvements between episodes, because what this project basically entailed was me begging, groveling, searching through every corner of the internet for a Polish speaker who would be willing to translate the show. And essentially, when I would find someone, they'd say, "Oh yes, I will do it for you," and then I piss off now. And the guy that did the first episode was actually the moderator of a Polish actually it was an English language fantasy forum, and he said, "Oh, okay, I'll do the first one for you," and then you can use that as a basis to generate interest and then find, someone else. So from that forum, there was another lady who did by far the best translations. She, I think episode 7 might have been one of them. She not only translated what was being said, but she added, a really good sort of prose and made it very well written. It was wonderful. And she did episode, I think she did 7 and or 12, or you'll know them because they're really good translations.
Yeah, suddenly the translation episode, it's got to be episode 7. It's a lot better.
Yeah, episode 7. And then I think she did another one a little bit after that. I know it wasn't 7 and 8, it was a few ones later. In between that, I found another guy who said, "Yes, okay, I will translate for you, but I need you to time subtitle for Highlander TV series." So then I was helping him time English subs for the Highlander TV series, which he was translating into Polish. So I'd time an episode, which would take freaking ages, and then he'd say, "Oh, very good, but your subtitle take a while." So then, okay, he said, "How about you do episode 3 next?" And then I subtitled that, and then timed that. Then he'd give me the subtitles, and then I think he did 2 or 3 episodes, which were maybe 2 to 5. And then I found another guy who was actually quite good. He translated all the episodes in between. That's right, Mikael. He was the person who I suspect was actually one of the developers of the Witcher game, because he knew that it was illegal, but not technically legal, but then again, it's not really immoral because they're not going to lose sales. But this guy I met on the Witcher, the board of the Witcher computer game, which was not yet out, and I just have a strong suspicion that he was one of the developers, but he also did a pretty good job. But then he, got busy and had to bail out. And then the last few episodes, episodes like 12 and 13, were done by a guy who, he actually had a website called Fantasy Filmscapes, and I became pretty good friends with him. And he helped with a few other translation subjects, like the Wolfhound. He was pivotal for that one, did an awesome job.
Okay, I'm sorry I asked. Okay, great. You went through a lot of different translators.
Basically, yes. The last two episodes are okay, but they're based on the Czech dub. But yes, basically, the quality of...
But why not, like, you must realize that the translations you're getting are kind of broken English, and sometimes they even contradict each other. Like, why not, like... Okay, those were fine as like a rough draft or whatever, If you had sent them to me or something, I might have watched with second pair of eyes and there caught a few of the clearly blaring mistakes. Not even maybe necessarily in the translation, but in the timing or, you know, I don't know. You need a second pair of eyes there because it was.
Oh, I know. I was doing this thing on my own. And like I said, I'm much, much better now than I was then.
Go back and put out a version 2.0.
Oh, I'd be happy to. I mean, like I said, of all the projects I've done, that one is still being downloaded all the time today. I'm quite proud of it. But the other problem you said about things that are vague and maybe contradictory actually has to do, apparently, I am told by Polish people, apparently has to do with the dialogue in the TV show itself, which some episodes were done by different writers, some were based directly on the book and they are the best episodes, and some are just, you know, a new story made for the TV show. So
yeah, the first couple are new stories.
And those
episode
ones
four gets
kind of have vague dialogue because the writers assume you know something about the book which they were criticized for.
I think before anybody goes out there and downloads this, go play the computer game. You can get it like dirt cheap on Steam.com,
definitely.
Or like $20. It's well worth it. And now they've got like
the books are out in English now, by the way.
It's been modded, so you can get like high res textures to update the graphics. So check that out.
Get it on Steam.
The Witcher.
Yeah, The Witcher. Jake, you got Steam? Check it out.
That's right. Now, before we go on, I wanted to. So I suppose you're still, this has been an on and off topic, but you still rabidly defend Star Wars and the butchery that George Lucas did to the the Star Wars franchise.
Episode 3 is still the best.
Episode 3, God. Well, you know, I'm sort of tempted now to go back. Like, I read the books, the Thrawn books, by Timothy Zahn.
Oh, yes.
Did you ever read those?
I know of them.
And you know, I sort of, after the butchery that Lucas did to the series, I sort of bailed. Like, that was episode 1. But I sort of bailed. I stopped reading, stopped doing anything Star Wars related, stopped reading the books, stopped, you know. But I've sort of taken a look back. And what inspired me to look again at the Star Wars novels and how far they've friggin' gotten was just a post at a website talking about. Here, I'll send a link. I guess this is in the wake of the Obama Nobel Peace Prize speech. But it says, Palpatine and the Perpetual Peace. Has a post up that this fellow, Jamal Bouet, I guess, has a post up that he frames as a qualified defense of Emperor Palpatine's agenda. but I think it is just better read as expressing the view that the idea of a galaxy-spanning republic is just hopelessly naive. I think the structure of the argument is fundamentally similar to what Kant says in Perpetual Peace about the idea of creating peace through a universal monarchy, according to Kant. So it goes on and on about how really it's the Empire was the much better form of government than the Galactic Republic. It goes all really Star Wars geeky on, and that let me follow a couple other posts. Defense of, I might have mentioned this before, but here's a case for the Empire. Everything you think you know about Star Wars is wrong, and there's this big post at the Weekly Standard saying the Galactic Republic was a complete failure, and the Empire was clearly better. Here's the original. Why Emperor Palpatine wasn't as wrong as you think. Here's another one. So this sort of inspired me. Boy, and he goes on. Now, the reason why I'm sort of inspired to read the books again, because this guy sort of, this guy in his defense of the Empire, he uses as his, as part of his rhetoric, the fact that the New Republic collapsed just like 40 years after.
That's right. That it becomes the New Republic or something.
No, the Empire comes back.
and I, which I didn't even know. Like I completely blew out the books and the comics, but in the literature that's been happening, which now it sort of inspired me to go back and reread again. I read the Thrawn books and I read Anderson's books there with that woman admiral, who eventually becomes sort of like about 40 years after the second Death Star, she becomes the new not an emperor, but like a sort of like a prime minister of the empire or whatever.
Minister for brooms.
Grand Moff or something, but
Grand Milf.
Yeah, so she, but. So they've got really interesting history, and I've been sort of, you know, reading. It's all, you know, it's not nothing in the books. It's all books and from the comic series, how the New Republic sort of disintegrated, and a quasi empire. They didn't really call it. They call it the Grand Alliance was formed with that initially was sort of a reformation of the New Republic, and the leader was one of Han Solo's. It was Han Solo's son. Han Solo had two twins, right? A boy and a girl. And the male twin, he becomes the leader of this, one of the two co-leaders, actually, of this grand alliance. And it ends up, he ends up becoming a Sith Lord. So it's a Sith, he's a Sith Lord leading this grand alliance. And you've got, but that eventually sort of collapses. And you've got this other empire remnant that's still hanging around, and that becomes almost like a benign empire, almost like almost in an Augustus fashion. They've got this new emperor over there that's sort of slowly building up his and it spreads to take over the whole galaxy, and then he's deposed, and a bad Sith Lord emperor comes back, and he takes it's all. They got this whole 150-year history post fall of post-Battle of Yavin history that's now playing out in books and comics that I know nothing about. So all afternoon today, before the show, I was reading up on all this, you know, sort of fake history of Star Wars post-Battle of Yavin, or Endor or whatever. And, post-Battle of Yavin, that's the time period. You got before Yavin and after Battle of Yavin, that's the timeline.
Well,
it's all very interesting. I gotta say, I'm sort of excited again. So George Lucas did not completely destroy my Star Wars. It just takes people who are not George Lucas to write the Star Wars. See, the problem with Lucas, everything he has rose-colored glasses. He's got no, or everything is black and white with him. There's no nuance. At least in if you looked at the like original movies, you could sort of feel that. You know, that there's a case for nuance, you know, like one of these things is, make no mistake, as emperor, Palpatine is a dictator, but a relatively benign one, like Pinochet. It's a dictatorship people can do business with. They collect taxes, patrol the skies, they try to stop organized crime.
You mean Pinochet
crime,
from Perfect Strangers?
No, I'm just joking. Pinochet as in...
Yes, I know, Argentina. Yeah.
That's... Yes. The empire has virtually no effect on the sort of like China, I guess. The empire has virtually no effect on the daily life of the average law-abiding citizen. Also, unlike the divine right Jedi, the empire is a meritocracy. The empire runs academies throughout the galaxy. Han Solo began his career at the Imperial Academy, and those who show promise are promoted often rapidly. In The Empire Strikes Back, Captain Piet is promoted quickly to admiral, and his successor falls down on the jaw. it's a great. But the most compelling evidence that the Empire isn't evil comes in The Empire Strikes Back, when Darth Vader is battling Luke Skywalker. After an exhausting fight, Vader is poised to finish off Luke, but he stays his hand. He tries to convert Luke to the dark side with a simple plea: there is no escape. Don't make me destroy you. Join me and I will complete your training. With our combined strength, we can end this destructive conflict and bring order to the galaxy. And here it is, we find the real controlling impulse for the dark side in the Empire. The Empire doesn't want slaves or destruction or evil. It wants order. So, there's some nuance there, but which in the original, when it's actual Lucas himself, though, everything is, I don't know. But you got to take that almost from the books, and you got to sort of extrapolate. And so now I'm slowly coming around back to being a pro Star Wars, as long as... Lucas doesn't fuck anything up and stays clear away from his used to be.
Well, you know, the Clone Wars TV series was initially kind of met with a groan, but it's been quite well received these days by new and old alike. I mean, I've only seen the first handful of episodes, and the first few were okay, but the last one I saw was actually really good, and apparently it gets better, so I'd be interested to see that too. But anyway, I will post those links in the show notes. And before we move on to my review, I just wanted to mention one thing that I saw in the news, which I think Alex will be equally interested in, and that is that a part of the stagnant economy in Japan, one side effect is that some acclaimed AV actresses, adult video actresses, are being auctioned off.
Really?
Yes. So,
that's awesome.
The most notable case is Maria Ozawa. She's, you know, the half Canadian, half Japanese adult video star who was actually, and I should be whipped for knowing this, but she was actually performing in Macau for a pole dancing. And basically, Maria Ozawa is now registered with a club and in Tokyo's Shibuya Entertainment Area, and a source says that once an asking price of 150,000 yen for 70 minutes with the actress appeared on the club's webpage, a flood of roughly 200 inquiries soon followed. So, Marie Ozawa is...
So I should say 150,000 yen, that's about... Right. Like, nobody knows what that means. It's about... Roughly, it's about 100 yen to the dollar, give or take. So
yeah.
Say 1,500 will buy you 70 minutes with Ms. Ozawa.
Yes, and for those of you that don't know, she's half Canadian, half Japanese. And I can tell you that... she's got a strange moral code because she went to a Japanese international school, and I just feel guilty for even knowing her biography.
You know a lot, but why do you feel guilty? Just admit you watch her porn all the time. And
this is from what I'm told, because you know we burn these every day in our Latter-day Saints church. But she she first had sex, which was like 13. She just sort of said, oh, you know what, I think I might be a good adult video star. And then in her interviews she says that, oh yeah, I brought my videos over to show my parents, but they didn't want to see it. You know, I feel really proud about my work and stuff. She's just utterly oblivious to the social
good.
Repercussions of being I'm not...
Why are you condemning her? That's fine.
I'm not saying this from any moral stance, but I'm just saying that it's just so strange, that's all.
It's not strange.
And as a father with a daughter, I'd be aghast if my daughter did that.
15 years, she'll be doing the same thing. Not necessarily porn, but... but I mean, never mind.
This podcast is over.
But, that's why you shouldn't have children, especially daughters. Yeah, everything is fine for the first 14 years, but then she'll be... But then they... you know, start blowing dudes at bus stops.
I don't know. I should ask you what you've been watching.
I've been watching Chinasmack.com, which is a phenomenal...
Oh, good segue.
Oh, thank you. Which is a phenomenal website. What they do here is they take Chinese forum... Go to different Chinese forums... And they translate what they're talking about in the forums. So you get the article that they're just the article, and you get with usually some explanation of what the article is talking about in Chinese. And you get all the comments from the Chinese who post about that article. They're translated too. Mm. So it's very interesting, and it's been around for quite a while. So like for example. Someone posted some pictures from the remake of Red Dawn, And if you're a child of the 80s, you know what Red Dawn is. That there was a movie that's from the mid-80s, like 84 or something, where you had the Soviets invading America, which even then was a bit ridiculous. But for those of you probably born, you know, post-Cold War, you don't remember this, but you felt that the threat of invasion from the Soviets was at least real, especially with Ronald Reagan as president. You sort of felt, and you got all the protests in Europe, especially in Europe. They thought, oh, the Soviets could be, you know, rolling across the, you know, the border at any time, you know. So I remember growing up in that period, you know, it felt sort of that kind of threat. So in Red Dawn, you've got, in 84, you had the Soviets invading America, and it was set in like a town in America. We led a resistance against the Soviet invasion. Well, they're making a remake of this, but since obviously the Soviet Union isn't around anymore, they got to pick on someone. So they've got the Chinese invading the U.S. And they've posted some pictures from the Red Dawn movie lot. And it's the reaction of the Chinese to some of these pictures is quite funny. So you've got some, imagine all these sort of red propaganda posters is one of these pictures. And it's like a Chinese-American Friendship Center, they call it. That's what they're calling this little shop that the Chinese occupiers have set up. And they've got three posters, big red, bold posters in the front. And one is like, one says, defeating your enemy. And it shows a picture done in kind of, well, almost, you know, propaganda fashion, you know, of a red hammer smashing the Capitol building.
Yeah, it's second, a new symbol they've made for this movie, it should be noted.
Oh, yeah, they've got sort of quasi kind of, the new Chinese flag is a red star with...
You could say it's Choviet.
Choviet, yeah, it has that sort of Soviet, Choviet feel, that's a good word. And the second poster is helping you get back on your feet, and it's a picture of like a strong Chinese arm pulling up a sort of weak sort of American arm. And the third one is repairing your economy. And there's a picture of like this really buff Chinese guy with a hammer, golden hammer, and he's on top of an anvil is like a dollar sign, and he's like, you know, fixing the dollars, and the dollar sign is sparkling because the Chinese are fixing.
This could really work as a satire, or not a satire, but...
Well, I think it's going to obviously be a satire. You know, I mean, because some of this stuff, like, boy, the Chinese economy is doing pretty well. You know, maybe they do. Maybe they can fix this out. There's some more posters here. They've got, your freedom has been a lie. Liberation is here. And there's a picture of the American flag with the Chinese star on it. And there's a picture of the internet and lies, lies, lies. Now there is truth. And there's a picture of an American dollar bill. Deceitful leaders, greedy corporations. This is not a democracy. And then the slogan is always, "We are here to help."
This movie sounds so great.
So you got the Chinese. The reactions for some of these Chinese guys. He's like, one guy says, "Maybe it is real, not a movie." And this guy, defeating your enemy, helping you back on your feet, repairing your economy. This is just for propaganda purposes, right? One guy says, "I'm waiting for this day to arrive. The great China will one day become a world power." Some of these guys are making fun of the look of the Chinese military they're like, "This doesn't look like the real Chinese military. You know, it doesn't look like the PLA at all, you know." Attack America. American devils are beginning to hate the rules of capitalism. Uncle Sam is stupid.
But some people are kind of the same way we are. That one of them is like, "Oh, that looks awesome, but I'm gonna have to wait until it's on BitTorrent because it's not gonna be on show here."
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. He says, "In the near future, we will fulfill this American imperialist's dream." this it's a great website. I highly recommend it for the average Joe Chinese on a lot of different stuff. And there's a whole series on,
for sure.
This is right up your alley, Dane. Perverted Girls Experiences by Chinese Men, Part 1. Perverted Girls Experiences by Chinese Men, Part 2. There's a 5-part series on Perverted Girls. I'm sure that's... Lex Sankaku calling up, Lex.
Yeah, but so check that out. Yes. Of course, I'll post that into the show notes. China Smack. And it's, you know, It is quite fascinating because I, for research purposes, was visiting VeryCD, which is a China's biggest ED2K hub of downloadable material through the ED2K network. And, you know, you just kind of have a look at what people from a very different place to where most of our listeners are from think on various subjects. So if you go to the page about, say, Kingdom of Heaven, you can see all these people in mainland China having, you know, huge debates about not just the movie, but about the Crusades itself. And it's really quite fascinating. You know, you turn on the Google Translator, you know, it comes up a bit strange, but you can basically get the gist. But, yeah. So, anyway, that was certainly some fascinating stuff that we've dragged up. So I think, without a further ado, it's time to talk about Armor Trooper Votoms, OVA, or in the same universe, Armor Hunter Mellow Link, right after these, or this message. Very exciting.
Hey gang, check out what other people have had to say about the Alpha Paddle podcast.
But anyway, it's all subjective. It's pointless to argue about this, and then Kent from Upper Paddle will say, "Well, excuse me, but I think babbity babbity baba," and then it'll go on forever.
Wait, that wasn't really that good. What else have people been saying about me? Kent is a prick.
Yeah, if you could like lock Kent in the bathroom or something, then it'd be fun.
Kent from Upper Paddle. Wow, I've been going for 3 years, and that's the best I can do. But if you're morbidly curious or just can't get enough of anime, video game, or movie podcasts, check me out at uppapaddle.com. That's UPAPADDLE.com. Or search for Upper Paddle in the iTunes directory. The Upper Paddle Podcast. Not really that good of a podcast.
Okay, so what I'm reviewing is an OVA series which has been on my radar for years because, you know, it's been talked about and it's been available in various different ways and it's quite famous in some respects, most notably having the masters completely destroyed, so all sources have to come from a Laserdisc, apparently, although a DVD was recently released in Japan, but I don't know where they got the masters from. Armor Hunter Mellow Link, which is a mecha anime from the 80s and set in the universe of the Armor Trooper Votoms. So, have you... You've seen Palison Files, haven't you, Alex?
Yes.
That was my first experience in the Votoms universe, too, which was a prequel. And, you know, it was, I don't know how Mellow Link, how Votoms fans reacted to that show, but, you know, it was quite good. I think the character designs in the first few episodes were terrible, and then it got a little bit better.
Yeah, I don't really remember that clearly, that Paislin Files. Yeah, I don't remember it at all. I remember not liking it. I don't particularly remember why. But, I have to rewatch it. I got it on my hard drive still, so.
Yeah. But anyway, yes, Armor Hunter Mellow Link is an OVA series, 12-episode OVA series, back from the Golden Age. In fact, what Regan Strongblood would call the Golden Bubble. So, you know, the Golden Age of anime, you know, with, you know, huge budgets and lots of experimentation was probably, you know, the 80s and early to mid-90s. But the Golden Bubble was probably about 1987 to 1992. And this was made 1998 to 1989, 12 episodes. Now, you think of, say, Freedom, which was, you know, OVAs are almost dead now, but Freedom was, you know, a huge OVA, and that came out, like, once every, I don't know, 6 to 7 months or something. But they pump out 12 episodes of this OVA in the space of a year. So it was basically one episode a month. And Armor Hunter Mellow Link is really unique in a way, because if you know anything about the Armored Trooper Votoms universe, there is certainly a Votom subculture who vehemently defend their series because, you know, against squeezed in the middle of the juggernaut that is Macross and the juggernaut that is Gundam.
Yeah.
You know, Votoms is kind of in the middle. I suppose you could say, in a way, it's Korea in that, you know, it's been squeezed in the middle of two huge powers, but it has emerged with its own sort of special, unique way. And the reason it's been so enduring is because of its, you know, uniqueness and specialness. There we go. That was deep. But Armored Trooper Votoms was a very sort of hard sci-fi, and the mechs were certainly not anything like Macross, where they could just do anything you wanted them to, basically in space, underwater, all over the place. Votoms, they're kind of like an extension of the human body, but they're very clunky in a way. I remember one person described it best as basically just sending soldiers out in metal coffins. And throughout Armor Hunter Mellowlink, you will not see a single different mecha apart from the standard soldier mecha. It's not like, you know, Macross or Gundam, where I suppose also to sell toys, they've got a zillion different varieties. In Mellowlink, and by extension Votoms, you're basically dealing with just the one mech, which is kind of looks like a clunkier, earlier model of a Zaku from Gundam.
Too, yeah.
And throughout Mellowlink, you just see the same mech. It might be a different colour. It might be souped up the same way someone would soup a car up and put, you know, little fire marks all over it and spray paint it and stuff. But it's essentially the same mech. And what makes Armor Hunter Mellowlink unique is that it is man versus mech, which is something that hasn't really been explored very much at all. You know, a mech is such a huge, giant monster of a thing that you just couldn't imagine a man taking one on. And as perhaps in the Macross universe this might not be so possible, but in the Mellowlink universe and the Battletech universe, you might have remembered the Battletech universe, it certainly is possible. I used to love playing the Battletech RPG and then outfit my foot soldiers with a bazooka and feel so proud if that guy could actually take a mech out. You need to see that little animation where he bazooka'd the mech. Remember that in Battletech?
Yeah.
Memories. But essentially, it's quite a low-tech universe, and even the sort of the motherships, because they can travel across the galaxy. That's where this war comes from, two sort of galactic nations having a war. But even the sort of the motherships, only a few of them have sort of beam weapons. So it's, you know, the technology is, you know, kind of cluttery. And this is, seems to all be set on the one planet after the war, and which adds to a lot of the atmosphere because, you know, everything's just sort of destroyed or barren. And in Mellowlink, the title is named after the main character, which, of course, is a very common name. Aliti Mellowlink. I'm sure if you look it up in the phone book, there'll be more the Mellowlinks than Chans or Wongs.
The gay guy, right?
No, no. You know what Japanese are like at trying to make foreign-sounding names. That's right, and the girl he meets is called Lulucy. How about we think of the name Lucy and add another Lou at the front? Ingenious! Lulucy! But yes, Mellowlink is the protagonist, and he is a relatively young fellow. Now, this is 80s young. If this OVA were made now, he'd be a 14-year-old high school boy. But in this, when I say young, he's like, you know, 24 or something. And as it's revealed, he was betrayed by the military by a group of several higher-ups, which resulted in the death of his squad. And the reason his squad was destroyed was they wanted to hold off an enemy attack and just sort of use them as bait. But to punish their questioning of those orders, Mellowlink's commander was demoted, and then they stripped away the mechs. They said, okay, you got to hold back this enemy force with just anti-tank guns or anti-armor guns, which, you know, is a death sentence. But the way it's depicted is actually really cool because the whole squad doesn't destroy a billion mechs. They destroy a few, and that's, you know, something of a marvel in itself. And obviously, Mellowlink survives, and he vows vengeance on all the military bigwigs who were responsible for the demotion of his commander and the death of all his squad mates. So each episode until the last, say, three or four are singular one-off episodes involving where each of these sort of military guys are now and Mellowlink's revenge on them. Mellowlink is a very skilled mech pilot, but he refuses to do so because, you know, his revenge would be more poetic if he kills these guys in their mechs with his anti-tank gun. You know, poetic justice, basically. And so, for example, in the second episode, which is the best of the early ones, I think, is one of these commanders is, you know, now retired from the military, and he's fighting other mechs in a coliseum. And Mellowlink says, okay, I'll take you on. And he remembers who Mellowlink is. And he says, but I'm not going to be piloting a mech. And it's not just a matter of shooting a gun and the mech dies. You know, obviously, Mellowlink has to employ a certain amount of deviance. So he's got trip wires and hiding spots and landmines and all sorts of stuff. And the way he takes one mech down is, you know, quite exhilarating. This is not a show where there's, you know, a zillion mechs fighting each other. It's one guy versus one mech most of the time. And also, he meets a fellow called Mr. Joy, which is a strange name, and Lucy, or Lulucy, sorry, who are recurring characters. And Mr. Joy is this mysterious blonde fellow who occasionally lends assistance to Mellowlink, and we don't quite know why. And Lulucy is the female character who turns up now and then and who ends up being quite a major character. I won't spoil that for you. You know, some of the set designs and stuff for the show is really quite cool. I remember the fourth episode, I believe it is, where one of the guys that Mellowlink wants revenge on is he's holed up in a mothership that sort of crashed into this city. This mothership is sort of kilometers high, and you just see Mellowlink climbing up this ship, and this complete wasteland of a city underneath him. It's kind of in this desert, so you can just imagine that during the war this ship crashed and destroyed the whole city. So it's these sort of post-apocalyptic images that really lend to the feel of the story. And the show gets bonus kudos for me for the sort of the twist at the end, which was very cool. I was quite surprised by that, and I enjoyed it. And it should be noted that this was directed by the same fellow who directed your favorite Gundam, MS-08 Team.
Oh, yeah, you know, all right, I'll have to check it out then.
Yes, and
I'll rewatch Paisland Files at the same time there.
Yeah, so anyway, it's just, it's a good show. And, it's actually quite bloody also. It's not kind of, oh, you got my mech, ay-ya! It can be, it's quite gritty and bloody. And, you know, it's not a video nasty by any means, but, you know, it's a lot more bloody than we expect these kind of mech shows to be. So, it's relatively episodic for the most part, as I said. Phone's ringing. Mellowlink hunts someone. Does he kill them? I think we know the answer. But it's the twist at the end that makes this show transcend being merely just sort of, you know, cool entertainment. And it is entertaining throughout.
Wait,
too.
How many episodes are there? I think I'm missing
12 episodes. 12 episodes. So each episode is about 20 minutes long. It's an OVA series, not a TV series, so the animation's a bit better. And I suppose they can get away with a bit more, although it was still the 80s, so they could get away with a lot anyway. But, you know, at the end, it's just a cool little show. You know, it's a good side story, and I often like side stories more than the main story. So, Anime Classic are now doing what they consider to be the definitive version of this. As I said, the masters were destroyed, so it's been quite difficult getting sort of very good quality versions. Most of them are Laserdisc rips, but the Anime Classic ones, they're you know, doing what they can with the source material. And from what we've seen, from, say, like the 2Y Restoration Committee, you can actually do a lot of good touching up with a Laserdisc source. So you can check out Anime Classics one. There are, you know, umpteen other translations of this out there, and I just downloaded one I got off Tokyo Tosho, which, you know, was pretty good in its own. So Armor Hunter Mellow Link. I believe Regan and I think Gerald from Anime World Order, Votoms is their mech show. So Gerald doesn't listen to the show, but Regan certainly does, so I'd be interested to know what he thinks of Armor Hunter Mellow Link in relation to the Armor Trooper Votoms, which I think I will, you know, I will put that on my ever-growing to-watch list.
All right.
Alex is so excited.
I'm terribly excited, but I don't know, I just got so much stuff to watch right now. I feel like, oh, another one. Plus, there's that new anime season coming up, so, yes.
Yes. All if right. It was Armor Hunter McBeal, you'd watch it.
McBeal. I never watched that. Calorie watched that show, though.
Anyway. Oh, she's a girl. She's genetically programmed, too, I think. Okay.
Right,
so,
moving on.
Moving on.
Here at the Fight Bait Anime Podcast, we strive to bring you a different type of anime review.
The only other shows I've seen where girls pilot robots, they're naked when they do it.
Making sure to touch on the high points of the shows we cover.
The Chain Patriot backdropped a snake.
And also the low points.
Incognito is probably one of the worst anime character designs I've ever seen in my entire life.
We also have game coverage.
If you haven't played Super Mario World, get the f*** off of my podcast.
Poor geographical knowledge.
Dude, Hong Kong is like the capital of Japan, isn't it?
And the infamous Whiskey Thursday.
The moral of the story here is, when you have a problem, you only need to find the right drink.
So come check out the Fight Bait Anime Podcast at www.fightbait.com. You can also find it in the iTunes Music Store. Fight Bait Anime.
It's like the pie. You know, I don't know how it's like the pie. I was trying to do a metaphor there, and I failed.
Because what the world needed was another anime podcast.
And if you're wondering who it was on the phone, when the phone was ringing, it was Connie's mother. And it just made me remember a funny story. You know, every time I just want to annoy Connie, I will do the sound of me getting, like, slap myself in the back and go, Ah, Connie, why? What are you doing? Stop it! And her mother would be like, what are you doing beating him?
That's great.
It just makes me remember, in high school, there was this fellow. For those of you who know me, back in the high school days, Mark B. That should be enough. He's this, you know, he's a nice fellow. He's a little fellow. He's actually in the army now, and we used to have so much fun doing this in English class. Was that he'd be up the back, and the teacher would not kind of pick on him a bit. Say, excuse me, Mark, what are you doing? And he'd be like, oh, I'm doing my work. And she said, look, can you just be a bit more quiet, please? And then he'd actually just say something like, yeah, okay. But because it was under his breath, so then me and my friends would go, ooh. Because, you know, if everyone does that at once, you'd say, excuse me, Mark, what was that? Nothing. He's oh, nothing. And she's like, are you sure, Mark? Now listen, this is your last chance. And then he'd be like, oh, okay. And then, ooh. Okay, Mark, I think that's enough out of you. You have to get outside. And then he'd explode and get into trouble. Memories.
Oh, anyway. You're horrible.
Yeah, I know.
All right, well, anyway, so that's another edition of Anime Pacific. Next week on the show, we're going to preview the winter 2010 anime season, and it should be easy since there are only like 15 shows, so we should be able to talk a little bit about each one. And
I have a feeling there might be more, but
I don't know. I think this is it, just according to this poster. So we'll see.
Yeah. I've already made my pick, at least based on the picture.
So let me guess, Chew Bra?
Oh, yes.
Me too. It's a show about, we'll give a preview of our preview. So this Chew Bra is apparently, it's a show about girls trying on underwear. Here's the synopsis. The story centers on Nayu, a middle school, it's a bit young, but okay, a middle school girl who shocks her schoolmates on the first day of school by wearing black lace panties. With this kind of underwear, she tries to spread the word on the merits of this kind of underwear. This is a show about her trying to evangelize. Was that a word?
Yes, I suppose.
Evangelize various underwear. So that'll be one to watch. Only in Japan.
That's right. For teenagers with Net Nanny on the computer, this is your solution.
All right. Well, if you've got any comments, please email us at animepacific@gmail.com. Check out our blog at annipack.blogsome.com, and check out the show page at animepacific.blogspot.com. I think I had all that
right.
That's right.
Yes, you did. So, as I get more time, I hope I can post more interesting stuff on the Annipack website. So keep checking it out. I know some of you are checking it out.
We always like getting comments, especially from new listeners. It makes us feel.
Yeah,
like
we got
not...
so many new people posting in that. You know, who should be the Kusanagi?
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah, that was good. So, you know, it's always good to hear from new people, and it makes us feel like we're not shouting out the window just to, like, five guys. So let us know you're listening. On that note, we'll sign off for this week.
Okay, bye.
So